Greetings to the brightest audience in the country. I am Bob Enyart, the pastor of Denver Bible Church. It's the day before Thanksgiving, and we are so very thankful to our God and Maker, our Creator, for the life He's given us and for the new life in Jesus Christ for each of us, given the opportunity, meaning if we've had the opportunity to grow, we have come to the point where we have rebelled against God, turned against Him, we've sinned, and sin means to hurt others or yourself or God. Typically, every sin grieves God also. And if you commit a crime against someone, God is able to forgive you if you ask Him to, because that sin is primarily against God and then also against the person you've hurt. And so that's why God has the standing and the authority to forgive us when we sin if we go to Him and ask Him to apply the sacrifice of Jesus Christ to our lives. That's why Christ died on the cross, so that He suffered the death that each one of us will have to unless we turn to Him in humility, and then He will forgive us. So for Thanksgiving, we have so much to be thankful for. At Denver Bible Church this Sunday, the sermon was about Thanksgiving and the history of Thanksgiving. And believe it or not, this is so interesting. It ties in, the history of Thanksgiving ties in a significant way to the history of the theology that we teach at Denver Bible Church. Because the pilgrims were looking for religious freedom. They tried going to Holland, and they realized, well, they had some freedom there, but their kids, not only did they start speaking Dutch, but they were picking up the pagan influences of the culture, and they thought that's not going to work, so they decided to sail the Atlantic, went to the New World. And what's interesting is that the Pilgrim's Progress, written by John Bunyan, became the second biggest bestseller in the history of mankind for centuries. For centuries, Pilgrim's Progress remained second only to the Holy Bible in sales. The Bible has sold billions of copies. And John Bunyan had been persecuted. He was put in prison the first time for 12 years. And then released back in the 1670s. And then he was free. He was put in prison for preaching the gospel without a license, basically. And what was it? The community of Bedford, England, had wanted him to be their preacher. 5 years he was released. Then he was put back in prison for another half a year. He got out of prison. And within a year of that, he published the first part or the first half of Pilgrim's Progress. So he wrote a good chunk of that book while in prison. And the theology in Pilgrim's Progress on a couple of significant points is identical to the theology that we teach at Denver Bible Church. And that's in our manuscript, My Life's Work, The Plot, An Overview of the Whole Bible. We point out in that book the similarities. In fact, we quote at some length from Pilgrim's Progress and show the, you know, very encouraging similarities in theology. Christians, depending on what church they go to, they have different theology, different doctrine. And of course, God has a set of doctrines that are the correct ones. And one of our goals as we go through life is to come as close as we can to understanding the truth as God has reported it to us. And it's our flesh and our sin and our pride that keeps us from understanding. And also bad teaching, because God gave to the body of Christ teachers. Let's go to the phones. First call from Texas. Eric, welcome to Bob and Yurt Live.
Hello, Bob. How are you?
I'm doing great, sir. What's up?
Well, I just wanted to kind of give a kind of a praise report. We've been protesting at the local abortion clinic here in Killeen, and I was just really encouraged today because some of the people who are coming with us were really were with us today. And by that, I mean that they were encouraging. They were glad that we were there. And it's just so encouraging because we've gone out so much, and we've had, you know, the response has been kind of, you know, oh, these guys, keep a distance from them. They speak. We don't. Mm-hmm. But it was so encouraging, and I'm hoping that it's kind of build as more positive. And I don't know how many people that are in Central Texas tune in to the show. Hopefully, more going forward. But if anybody is in Central Texas, Killeen's right smack in the middle, kind of. Mm-hmm. So certainly.
All right. Well, Eric, let me add to that. My mother, Connie Sharon. And Al Sharon, he's our office manager here. They're in Florida on vacation, and my mother found out where the nearest abortion clinic was, and she went there yesterday. She took a little homemade sign, talked to about five people, including three women going in for abortions, and what a dramatic time she had, her and Al Sharon, just going on their own. And they got to witness and to talk to not only the three women going in, and sadly, there were no saves, but there were powerful testimony given to those women, and to a couple workers, construction workers, if you will. And so always to have a testimony where injustice is occurring and to share with people that there is a God. There is a right and wrong that flows from him, and there is a judgment day, and we are obligated to honor God, and if we don't, there is a price that will be paid. So, yeah, all right.
It's great whenever people use their vacation time to actually stand up against abortion. Most people, I don't think, do that.
Well, sure, it's pretty neat. Al and Connie Sharon are a real blessing around here at the Bob and Yurt Live Cabin in the foothills of the Rockies. So thank you. Thank you very much, Eric.
All right. Thank you.
That's Killeen, Texas, right? Okay. Killeen, Texas. So if you live anywhere near there, how could we get them in touch? I know they could go to kgov.com, our website, click on the Bob and Yurt Live forum and say, hey, I live in Texas and I'd like to get with other listeners of Bob and Yurt Live, other Christians, other pro-lifers. Okay, pretty cool. We had a Bible study taught last week at our Pro-Life Leader Summit by Alan Keyes. He gave a one-hour Bible study on God and the death penalty. It was fascinating. He dealt with the New Testament, though most of it came out of the Old Testament, including Genesis. And I have in front of me notes regarding the death penalty and its influence, whether or not it has a connection to abortion. When governments outlaw, when they abolish the death penalty, it's uncanny how often they then legalize abortion. And the argument Alan Keyes made, he did this on a PBS Republican presidential debate in September. He said that the death penalty is rooted in universal justice, and it sends a message of respect for life. So I'd like to talk about that. Also, I'd like to read to you a letter to the editor that I sent to the New York Times. It's very brief, and they did an article similar to what the Associated Press did and Matt Drudge regarding our personhood effort. Here in Colorado, there have been about 150 media reports around the country and even outside of the U.S. regarding the personhood amendment effort here in Colorado, led by ColoradoForEqualRights.com. And what some in the media will do is attempt to mock us in the positioning of this effort by saying it's a battle for the rights of eggs. And of course, people think of chicken and chicken eggs and going to the grocery store and getting a dozen eggs. And even when they say human eggs, that's their intention to mock us, that it's the rights of eggs. And that's simply not the case. So that's what the New York Times did, and I sent a short letter to the editor, and I'd like to read that to you. Dear editor, I understand the New York Times' desire to use mocking headlines against those of us who advocate enforcement of God's command, do not murder, to outlaw the killing of unborn children. But even the Times should draw the line at downright incorrect headlines. You titled Kirk Johnson's November 18th article, quote, and here's their headline, "Proposed Colorado Measure on Rights for Human Eggs," unquote. And there is no proposed measure to give eggs rights. That's simply false. But let's continue with my letter to the editor. So you titled Kirk Johnson's November 18th article, "Proposed Colorado Measure on Rights for Human Eggs," unquote. We should send you all back to Biology 101. A woman's ovum has half the genetic material that makes up a human being. Those who humble themselves before our Creator understand that at the moment of fertilization, we have an obligation to protect that unique, living human being made in God's image and likeness. Bob Enyart, and so on. So it's not likely the New York Times will publish that letter to the editor. It's pithy enough, isn't it? To use an O'Reilly word, it's short enough, and it's to the point. And, of course, it returns their favor. It returns the favor. So now I want to share with you a little bit of what Alan Key said, not only at our leader summit last week. Again, he gave a one-hour Bible study on the death penalty and why, as Christians and pro-lifers, we should support the death penalty. Of course, liberals, they will almost cackle and howl when they hear that a pro-lifer supports the death penalty. They said, you're against abortion and you support the death penalty? They can't comprehend it. And I wonder, do they ever stop even to think? I like to ask people, have you thought long about this issue? Or did this just pop into your head? And are you just repeating some cliche? Because the unborn are innocent. An unborn child is innocent. And a convicted murderer, say, convicted rapist murderer, he's guilty. He is guilty. So the Christian who honors God has a desire to honor him and obey him, in that government should punish the guilty and protect the innocent. So this is, of course, a fundamental biblical position. For people who have never heard of the Bible, God has given them a conscience. That is, he has written his law in their hearts. Romans chapter 2, the conscience that God wrote on our hearts. And that conscience tells us, now we could be in rebellion against God, and we could grow hard-hearted, but that conscience tells us, even unbelievers, that it is right to punish the guilty and to protect the innocent. So that at the end of, let's say, a Mel Gibson movie, even the liberals who are in a theater, who see the kidnapper, the bad guys, the torturers, the terrorist, at the end of the movie, the bad guys get it, and they get it good. And the liberal, he cheers. He's so excited, and then he's mad at himself for cheering because he has this antenna, this uncanny sense of knowing what it means to rebel against God. And so he doesn't like the fact that he approves of the wicked being punished. He doesn't like that because that flows from God's throne, the great white throne judgment, and the authority that God has to punish the wicked, those who are not repentant, and he has delegated that authority to individuals in self-defense and to governments to punish criminals. And so liberals, they just don't like it when they see the wicked being punished, when they see vengeance, wrath, and terror against the evildoer, they don't like it in their intellectual mode as liberals, because they prefer to rebel against everything that has any hint of truth or righteousness. But the conscience within them, it slips out by accident. By accident, it comes out. You know, Hollywood movies that will uphold the general biblical model of truth and loyalty and justice and selflessness and the wicked being punished and the innocent being vindicated and all that, which means nothing if there are only atoms and molecules. If the pagan secular view of the world is correct and they're just atoms and molecules, there's no such thing as ultimate or absolute right or wrong. Yet Hollywood has a real hard time making movies that, even through to their conclusion, their climax, that do not reinforce the Judeo-Christian view of the world. I mean, they do it, but it's difficult for them. And the big movies, the real successful movies, are typically the ones that reinforce truth and justice and morality at some level, where the bad guys fail or they get punished and the good guys have the victory and they get vindicated. And that is all a preview or a trailer for Judgment Day. If you remember 9/11, when you saw the news footage and the live coverage of the attacks on especially the second tower and then both towers falling, and how horrifying that was. If you could go back and remember that, September 2001, think of all that horror, and that was basically a preview of the Great Tribulation. That was a trailer. That was a promo for the Great Tribulation. That was just a small taste of the wrath that will be unleashed on the world. And I'm not saying that God did 9/11. I reject that utterly. 9/11 was Islamic terrorists, and they're in complete rebellion against God. But I am saying that that kind of horror is just a glimpse. It's a trailer. It's a preview of the wrath that will be unleashed on the world because of its rebellion against God. And rebellion against God means, with all the suffering and hurt and pain in the world today, in divorce court, in company office politics, in history, empires, no matter where you look, betrayals, cruelties, suffering, selfishness, pride, bitterness, lack of forgiveness, hatreds, all that, if you are apathetic toward God, you don't care about God, you are part of the problem. The cruelty and wickedness in the world happens because people are apathetic toward it. They don't care. They don't care. And that apathy, that refusal to love your neighbor as God has revealed to us what that means, that means that you, if you do that, you are part of the problem. And so the suffering that children go through, it happens because of your heart's rebellion toward God and the hardness of your heart and the wickedness in you and in me, Bob Enyart. Until I recognized it and asked God to forgive me through Jesus Christ and trust in his death and resurrection. What is it in the evidence for Jesus Christ that you find not compelling? What is it about Christ that you think he's not worthy of your love and devotion? What is it about Jesus Christ that you think merits you ignoring him? So there is this Christian worldview, and this week, especially Thanksgiving, when Christians look to God with a grateful heart and thank him. Give thanks with the grateful heart. Give thanks. And who do the liberals thank? An atheist. What does he do? Thanksgiving. It's time to give thanks. What does he give thanks to? The random chance? Give thanks to the bugs and ants? What does he, who does he give thanks to? To a ball of fire? To a clump of rock and dirt? Does he get down and thank the dirt? Thank the cycle of nature? What does he do? Go out in the backyard and look at a cesspool and give thanks to the cycle of nature? Is that what he does? It's such a tragic emptiness and a hollowness. And so there's this instinctive desire among unbelievers to justify the wicked and to condemn the innocent, so that by the hundreds of millions, they will advocate killing the innocent child in the womb, and they will protect the convicted murderer rapist. So to be a liberal, a good liberal, you have to be willing to kill the baby and to love and protect the rapist murderer. Kill the baby, love and protect the murderer, and then you can be a good liberal. So on PBS in September, Alan Keyes was part of the Republican presidential debate, and he was asked about the death penalty. And if his answer was correct, and I believe it's correct, it's biblical, so it is correct. But his answer provides a linkage to abortion. This is what he said. He said, "I support the death penalty. It has a basis in universal justice and not just punishment, but sends a message of respect for life." And that's right, the sanctity of life. When God commanded the death penalty in Scripture, and by the way, the New Testament is filled with support for the death penalty, filled. And we have a 2-hour DVD called God and the Death Penalty, New Testament Support for Capital Punishment. I think we have a few leftover VHS tapes of that also. But mostly, of course, people want it on DVD. And it's great for Sunday school classes. You could show it over 2 Sundays. It's great for discussion, to teach others about God and the death penalty. It has the gospel of Jesus Christ in this DVD because the death penalty is at the heart of the gospel of Jesus Christ. And when Christians are confused by the godless and they start to accept their arguments against the death penalty and they start to think there's something wrong with the death penalty, then what happens is they begin to undermine the gospel of Jesus Christ because it's based on the death penalty, God the Father requiring the execution, the crucifixion of God the Son in order to meet the demands of justice and provide salvation for those who trust in him. So it turns out that the death penalty, for example, was being struck down in countries like the Soviet Union and in America and elsewhere in the years prior to the widespread legalization of abortion. Now, I have a little chart in front of me, and it shows the last execution of some of our allies, what year some of our allies had their last execution. And then what year did they legalize abortion? And for example, in Canada, their last execution was 1962. godless government there in Canada, pagan. And they legalized abortion in 1988. So from the 60s to the 80s. In Great Britain, their last execution was in 1964. They legalized abortion in 1967. Right, that year sound familiar? Israel's last, well, they outlawed execution for ordinary crime in 1954. They legalized abortion in 1977. Spain, last execution, 1975. They legalized abortion in 1985. Sweden, their last execution was in 1910. They legalized abortion in 1938. America, do you recall in 1972, the U.S. Supreme Court commuted all the death sentences of the murderers on death row? There were 629 death sentences. They commuted them all to life in prison. They suspended all execution in 1972, and then in 1973, January 1973, they legalized abortion nationwide. Of course, then, with our particular history, in 1976, they did reinstate the death penalty, but it's very few and far between and rather infrequent as compared to the incidence of people convicted of murder and kidnapping, for example. The Soviet Union, our most significant enemy through the 1900s, they outlawed execution for all crime in 1917, just after the October Revolution, and then they legalized abortion in 1920. Now, this pattern, this is not how it happened all over the world in all countries, but there is a trend. There is a trend when you look at the worldwide maps for the status of abortion and the status of the death penalty. There are trends. And God says in Ezekiel 13:19, "Do not profane me, killing people who should not die and keeping people alive who should not live." And the New Testament is filled with support for the death penalty. The Gospels, the Book of Acts, the Epistles, the Book of Revelation. So please, if you've never seen that DVD, God and the Death Penalty, please consider getting that from us. You can call us 1-800-8-NYART, 1-800-836-9278, or go to our website, KGov, KGOV.com. Click on the store, go in the video department, and you'll find God and the Death Penalty. Have a wonderful Thanksgiving, and Maranatha Christian Center, what a great school.